One time a group of 30 monks came to see the Buddha, the wilderness dwellers. And after they sat down, the Buddha said to himself, "How can I teach them the Dharma in such a way that their hearts are released from clinging?" So he brought up the issue of samsara, how it comes from an inconceivable beginning. And he asked them, "Which do you think is greater, the water in the oceans or the amount of blood you've lost through having your heads cut off?" They give the right answer, the amount of blood. Then it goes down into detail about the various ways they could have had their heads cut off. When there were cows and they had their cow heads cut off. When there were water buffaloes, they had their water buffalo heads cut off. Goats had their goat heads cut off. Sheep, they had their sheep heads cut off. When they're human beings, they had their heads cut off because they were highway robbers, village robbers, adulterers. In each category, like just the cows, the amount of times they had their heads cut off, their cow heads cut off, and lost the blood was greater than the water in all the oceans. The monks developed a strong sense of sangwega, dispassion, and they were released from clinging. Now notice, the Buddha never mentioned the word not-self there. There are many cases in the canon where people gain awakening while listening to a Dharma talk. And the issue of self and not-self just doesn't come up. The Sariputta, when he became a stream enterer, all he learned about, was whatever arises from a cause, and its cessation. From that he was able to intuit enough of the Dharma to see the deathless. Later on, when the Buddha was teaching Dikkanaka, a wanderer, talked about the issue of feelings, how they're dependently co-arising. Again, no mention of self or not self. Venerable Sariputta, by that time a monk, was fanning the Buddha. He followed along with the talk, looked directly into his own mind, looked at his relationship to feelings, and was released from lack of clinging. So the issue of self is not always the issue that stands in the way of awakening. It's not the case that you have to have a right view about self and not self in order to gain awakening. You simply have to see the things that you've been holding on to as not worth it. The case of the 30 monks, just that image of all that blood and all the lowly births they'd had in samsara, made them realize that it just wasn't worth it. It's a value judgment the Buddha's asking you to make. Clinging itself is a value judgment. Whatever difficult as they may be in clinging, you feel it's worth it. And his purpose in teaching was to make you see that it's not worth it. And whatever techniques he could use, in terms of concepts, in terms of images, similes, whatever would work, he would use. This principle applies to the teaching on not-self as well. When it works, when it's effective, and it's useful, he would use it. But it's not the case he would have you arrive at the conclusion there is no self, simply that your construction of a self comes from the aggregates, comes from the sense media. You take them as raw materials. You latch onto them, and that creates a being, creates your sense of self, because you think it's worth it, because there are pleasures that come from the aggregates. The Buddha does have you look at the aggregates as being stressful and constant, but he doesn't deny that they have their pleasures. The question simply is, are the pleasures worth it? Is it worth holding on? Now, in some cases, in the course of following the path, when it is useful to have a good, healthy sense of self as being responsible for the path, capable of taking it on, the self that's going to benefit, the self that can observe what you're doing, and the self that can judge whether the results are good or not, what needs to be done in order to change the path further and further along. You need to have a sense of self around these things. But there comes a point where you don't need it anymore. In fact, it's getting in the way of higher attainments. That's when he has you apply the perception of not-self. Some people say that awakening is seeing that there is no self. But for a lot of people, the question of self was not the issue in their awakening. It's hard to see what kind of experience would guarantee the idea that there is or is not a self. Just because you see your sense of self disappearing doesn't mean there's no self. It just means that whatever you saw disappear was not you. So learn to use the not-self teaching as a tool to pry away your identification with things that are really not worth it. But remember, we're not here to come to the truth of no self. Many times people say that that's a sign of stream entry, and they try to make themselves see there is no self, and then end up claiming to have seen that there was no self, based on some pretty shaky evidence. Well, think about the group of five monks. The Buddha didn't teach them non-self until they already were stream enterers. Stream entry had involved seeing that there was no self. There would have been no need to teach that. What need there was in gaining stream entry. They'd let go of the idea that I am this with regard to the aggregates. They just saw the aggregates are not worth holding on to. But they still had a subtle I am, which is called conceit, a sense of their existing as beings, which kind of floated around the aggregates. One of the images in the canon is of the scent of a lotus. It's not the same thing as the petals, not the same thing as the stamens, but it's just there around the lotus. Or the smell of a cleaning agent in some cloth that's been cleaned. And so, in order to get rid of that sense of I am, the Buddha then taught them the teaching on that self with regard to the aggregates, to look very, very carefully to see if there's any trace of clinging. Because that's what the teachings are all about. The purpose of the teachings is to get you to end clinging. But you do have to cling to the path up to a certain point in order to get to the point where you can totally let go. But remember that all the Buddhist teachings, whether they're concepts or images or sometimes arguments, reasoned step-by-step analyses, they're all for the purpose of getting you beyond clinging. Because clinging is a value judgment, they're basically designed to make you reverse your value judgment, to see that the things you liked, the things you held on to, were not worth it. They were actually working against you, even as you clung to them. There's a time when Sariputta was teaching Yamaka. And this was after Yamaka had become a stream enterer. Now, when you become a stream enterer, that means there's still some lingering clinging. The question is, where is it? In this case, Sariputta goes back to the five aggregates. He calls them murderous. He tells a story. There's a man who wants to kill a king. He realizes the king is hard to approach. So he applies for the king's service, gets closer and closer to the king, acts as a trusted servant, gets up in the morning before the king, goes to bed at night after the king, does whatever the king tells him to do. And finally, when he gets the king one-on-one, he kills him. And Sariputta says, that murderer, he was actually already a murderer, even as he was being loyal to the king. That was his plan. Now think about that in terms of the five-step program, which is probably one of the Buddha's most important and least appreciated teachings. It's not a list of terms. It's stages in a process. You see the origination of something, you see its passing away, you see its allure, you see its drawbacks. And when you can compare the allure with the drawbacks and see that the drawbacks way outweigh the allure, then your escape is through dispassion. So in this case, the drawbacks of that murderer were that was planning to kill the king. But he was already a murderer, planning murder, as he was being loyal to the king. So in the same way, the aggregates, even though they have their allure, within their allure are the drawbacks. When you see that, however you see it, whether it's seeing that they're inconstant, unreliable, stressful, a burden, not self. In other words, you've taken things that don't really belong to you and you've assembled a sense of you and yours out of them. And they're all going to fall apart because they haven't been part of that pact with you. You made the pact with yourself to lay claim to them. They didn't have anything to do with it. They were already murdering you. So they kept disappointing you, kept giving you stress and pain. This teaching was enough to turn Benro Yamaka into an arahant as he contemplated it. So realize the purpose of the teachings is for the sake of release through lack of clinging. And they're meant to be strategies, all of them. Now in some cases, their truth is true and beneficial all the time, like the basic teaching on abandoning unskillful qualities and developing skillful ones, or the Four Noble Truths in their duties to comprehend suffering, to abandon its cause, to realize its cessation, and to develop the path. These things are true and beneficial all the time. The teaching on not-self, that's true all the time. Those things that you lay claim to as yours are not really yours. But whether you're going to see them in that light or continue to see them as self will depend on the time and the stage you are in the practice. Because when you hold on to a sense of self as you're developing concentration, the self that's responsible for doing the path, the self that says, I will do this, the self that says, I will give rise to what is skillful and then I will maintain what is skillful, these are all the Buddha's own words. You hold on to that sense of self because it's useful and because you can use it to exercise some control. So there's a certain truth to that. Your act of claiming these things does give you some power over them. But then there comes a point where the power you exercise over them is the one thing getting in the way, the one attachment, the one type of clinging that's getting in the way. You've got to drop them. So realize that all the Buddhist teachings are strategies for the sake of lack of clinging. The Buddha knew how to use them that way, and we can benefit most from them by learning to use them that way as well. This is one of the reasons why it's good to read the suttas, not just the Abhidhamma. The Abhidhamma is just a list of terms. And there's nothing about the list that's necessarily liberating, that tells you what to do with them. It's in the suttas you see that the Buddha gave this teaching to this person who had this background, and that person got these results. He gave that teaching to that person who had a different background, but still got the same results. It's like learning about medicine. You can learn the names of various medicines, even what they're good for. But actually how you use the medicines as part of a treatment. It's good to see a master doctor as he treats his patients. That's what the suttas provide. That's what the stories of the Ajahns teaching their students provide. So remember, the Dharma is a living process. It's not just lists of words, lists of definitions. It's words with a purpose, directed thoughts and evaluations, types of fabrication, done with knowledge. The Buddha used them with knowledge. We have to learn how to use them with knowledge as well. That's when we can realize their purpose and benefit from it.